Give a man a fish and you feed him for a day. Teach a man to fish and you feed him for a lifetime. My dear listeners, this is what our alma mater, our knowledge does. Our alma mater plays a pivotal role in shaping the individuals we become. The words I just narrated were from the incredible Jewish philosopher Maimonides. And I thought to myself, these are the best words to begin the episode with. For me, my alma mater has been instrumental in shaping my identity. It's where my passion for research was ignited, where I encountered remarkable individuals, and where I was inspired by educators who were not only knowledgeable, but also exceptional teachers. The values instilled by our alma mater serve as a guiding principles, influencing the trajectories of our careers and the paths that we choose to pursue in future. Looking back on my experiences, I've noticed a lack of stories from successful alumni who talk about their careers after college. So, my dear listeners, today's episode is a special one, as I thought it's about high time we hear from people who have been through similar paths during their college days. It's my pleasure introducing Mayank Chug, a passionate researcher blending molecular biology, cellular nanoscience, and developmental biology. Mayank has studied at renowned institutions like Harvard Medical School and, of course, my alma mater, Aisa Mohali, where he owned his expertise in understanding how cells function. As a postdoctoral student at Harvard Medical School, Mayank investigates how organs develop using advanced techniques like live imaging and CRISPR technology. Before this, he studied tiny molecular motors involved in cell division, shedding light on how cells divide. Mayank's scientific journey began at ISA, where he explored blood stem cells in fruit flies. After that, he's traveled throughout the globe, gaining insights into various scientific fields. But for today's episode, we'll have Mayank's views on changing landscape of research, his commitment to diversity and inclusion in science, and his dream for the future of Indian science and beyond. All right. Mayank, I've already introduced you to the listeners. Just a little bit about yourself, about your research background. And, you know, as a fellow ICER alumni person, I have to ask you this question. What was your experience in ICER? And versus how did that compare being abroad?
Hi, Mahima. And I thank you for this great opportunity. So to people listening, I am Mayank Chug. I am currently a transitioning postdoc in systems biology here at Harvard Med School. My major interest so far has been fascination and, you know, drive to understand how from a single cell do we become this organism which are fully functional with organs beautifully shaped. So I think that fascination kicked in with developmental biology classes at ICER by Lalit Kamantol. Yeah. And, you know, with whose lab I worked for several years, you know, after my classes as a bachelor student, and learned more about the hematopoietic system and stem cells. And then I think that intrinsically shaped or set the footing for me. And I think from broadly looking now, I think I've been majorly interested in the cellular biology and the mechanical principles of how organs and tissues are shaped mm-hmm. in development. Yeah, so I think that's my major interest and my career path so far that also had brought me to Harvard. And now going back to ICER, I think ICER, I am absolutely and incredibly grateful to. I think my personal as well as career path is massively shaped by ICER. Mm-hmm. One, I would like to point out one aspect, at least from both of these facets of career and personal life. I think one major career feature that ICER is truly, you know, what the praise and what all the, you know, hype for is truly interdisciplinary interdisciplinarity. You know, I think that has changed the way I look at science and the world. For example, for to the listeners out there, I mean, you know, this was a BS MS dual degree program where we are put together on a residential campus for like 5 years, right? We have our own community of friends, and then we go to classes and indulge in research. So that's been a great experience overall. But what I mean by interdisciplinarity is that I could, you know, learn all about stem cells and Drosophila and C. elegans, but at the same time, the structure or the curriculum allowed me to go and take courses in identity and city structures and philosophy, literature. And you know, this is for these courses were for me, but like there are people who have had courses in quantum mechanics and, you know, like geography. And this is amazing that you can try to combine those things because science is never done in isolation. And I think you realize how much we siloed small things. For example, thinking about anthropology, sociology, and, you know, evolution of humans, right? So they all address the sort of the same thing, but in with different approaches. But the interaction seems to be very, very limited. And I think ISA had provided that perspective that I still to this day, in fact, I have actually amplified, not just value, but I have actually amplified and tried to cultivate in my own lab experiences. And I think now the personal aspect was, I think I had it gave also a perspective to me to make friends and colleagues from all sorts of backgrounds and, you know, living experiences from India is a big country, and I think we forget that. And I think ISER had showed me that window that people come from all walks of life and all sort of backgrounds and all sort of experiences, and how one can be in that small community and have their own voice and their personality and their advocacy efforts, their activism. And it was amazing. And you know, I think that's the beauty of ISER.
And I think to have a community like that in India, it was a feat itself back in 2009, right? Like
That is
research,
incredible.
research is done from one perspective. My father is a botanist, and when he came to ISA for the first time, he was blown away by the community that there is. We were so closely knit together, like I'm talking about MS18 as a batch, and the courses that you just talked about, I was able to choose what I wanted to do. It was not just basically I wanted to get into a laboratory and do research. I learned about equity in research. I learned about, we had science communication courses, so I have ventured into science communication because of ISER. So it's something that is very unique, and that's why I keep telling my cousins as well that this is not a typical college that you see in Karan Johar movies, right? It's a very beautifully crafted, college with keeping in mind the interests of everybody and keeping everybody's interests alive. I feel like that. I sort of did that for me. So it had been incredible.
I absolutely agree. I absolutely agree. And I think this is, I think it's hard to sort of put this, you know, I mean, now that I'm abroad and seeing that similar models might exist in different universities, might, you know, does not surprise any, you know, non-Indian person. But I think it is a big deal if you are coming from India, and having that privilege of being at ISER was phenomenal, as you said. Like, it is incredible. None of that sort of structure and so much open community does not exist as such. So I think that was you know, a grateful and invaluable experience for me.
It has
And for
shaped,
you, I
yes,
assume.
it has shaped me into being more open, talking about equality in STEM, specifically for minority communities. I have been advocate since my 3rd year, and I love it talking about it. Talking about you, sorry, back into that. We were talking about equity research and you talk a lot, Mayank, about diversity and inclusion in academia. I just wanted to know, why did you venture into this? Why did you feel like, being in a traditional academic pathway is not the way for you, and you want to do something about equality, you want to do something about diversity, and you want to learn more about it? Something that shaped your career trajectory into this right now, or just a normal experience that you want listeners to know?
I think this is one big question that I'm also trying to figure out in some ways by myself as I'm going forward, and I'll talk more about it. But I think my why I ventured into this, it did not happen by accident. I think what happened by accident was primarily science, not the this part. I think I was very, very innately as a kid as well, more struck by the differences in people's attitude and perceptions and behavior towards different sort of people. Or, for example, I mean, it was okay in my family because I have a sibling who is a woman, but like seeing how women are being treated or how people from coming from different socioeconomic background are treated, how colorism is present and to what extent colorism is present in India, how those people are treated. And I think as a kid that startled me, but then you move on. You go to school and you have your routine and you stay at home, you play and you move on. But I think it started to become big and big when I go out of the house. So at ICER, things were incredibly visible to me. But I think I came from a background where my parents could not support me. So being an ICER also meant a lot to me. And I could relate with people who did not have any financial or economic backbone. So, it was like having a fellowship from the government of India was amazing because I would not have imagined what would I have done without that, without ICER, for example. So I could relate like people coming from socioeconomic background. For me, it was experience from, last few years because my family went broke. But like there are people who literally grew up their entire life like that. So I could relate incredibly a lot more when it came to the socioeconomic status. And then, colorism was also present in India at the time, even including in ICER. And you could see that in subtle attitudes and behaviors towards people that always stuck out. But I think I did not take on this torch for like very loud advocacy or activism as such on campus around that. I think I chose what I wanted to focus on and having to like learn more. Having taking all these courses and working on with like smaller goals and trying to focus more on research. And when I got out of ICER, when I moved to Germany from a PhD, then you realize that like things just don't end there. These are the problems that not only India has, but this is problem that the world has. Now India becomes one of those, people in a way, and like the global south becomes a country in a way, because you can see that how, a few countries in the global north which have higher or which are stronger in terms of their socioeconomic background, they still maintain and regulate the policies that knowledge that basically go on how knowledge is produced and shared. And I think I tried to take that on, that specific element with all those experiences from childhood and from ICER, and try to see how can I actually do this in STEM or in science or scientific research. I started out with primarily with open access science and partnering with ASAP Bio, which has been popularizing around preprints and open access publishing. I think that was amazing. So during my PhD, I became an ambassador, and I would talk to people in my department, in the lab, and then later on university around preprints, preprint journal clubs, and why these matter to people and why should we be publishing that. And slowly, and then at the same time, I think that ICER element of bringing two campuses together, sciences and the social sciences, that was a very, very strong feeling, and that an urgent need as well for like people's perceptions to grow and connect more to the society as well. So that grew, and I also started this initiative, Together We Science, where basically I bring all these campuses together. And then, have conversations, and give a space for early career researchers where they could talk about their research and potential to collaborate. And now here in that I'm in the US, I see a different perspective, right? Like this keeps on evolving and I keep learning. And now I think as my interest is crystallizing, I think it's becoming clear to me what matters to me and what my real calling in the life is. And I think I have figured so far my calling is more intuitively laden that I knew as a kid, and that was how can we actually create more equitable societies. And I think I try to reframe that, or I try to sort of work that in the context of higher education, STEM higher education, because this is the experience that I have and from multiple countries, so I can focus on different elements and multicultural elements as well. So yeah, I think my future now is sort of crafting into how does societal inequities of race, gender, citizenship, and socioeconomic status impact STEM workforce and innovation. So it's a bicyclical relationship. It's not one way. Like also the workforce and technology and innovation also influence these social dimensions of race, gender, citizenship, and socioeconomic background. So, to somebody else out there, this seemed like a very, very sociological question, which is fine. And it is a sociological question, truly. But at the same time, it is essentially looking at the science of science and to try to understand, can we bridge these fields? We don't have to necessarily sit in two different campuses or two separate buildings, try to ask the same questions, but try to interact and bring these approaches and theories and methods to understand this in a more holistic fashion.
It's a very good, and I think like you answered the question that I was about to ask you. What are your plans? So that's great. Also, Mayank, I wanted to know, I was going through your webpage. It's beautifully crafted, first of all. Congratulations on that. I loved it. Secondly, I wanted to
Thank
know,
you.
I read about your philosophy on DEIB, something that the listeners might not know about. And I want you to tell the listeners, why did you choose this philosophy, first of all? And secondly, how do you abide by this? And any projects that you did which made you feel like, this is something that I would live by currently. It might change in future, but this is something that I want to live by.
I think now I have included that statement for DEIB, which stands for Diversity, Equity, Inclusion, and Belonging. because it is important to ensure any human being from irrespective of whatever background they're coming from, they have accessibility to partake in the process of knowledge production and knowledge sharing. And so now that is the philosophy, right? And now how do I ensure I'm committed to it, right? I think that's a question that you probably sort of I paraphrase it, but that's something that I've put it out on my website. And I think that comes from primarily from my own lived experiences that I started in the beginning and living experiences of mine, but also my friends and colleagues, and whose stories I know dearly, and how they are navigating through their paths coming from absolutely different backgrounds. And now, when I say these two terms, that actually encompass my personal as well as career sort of lived experiences in three different continents now. So I basically knowing the social structures and how the society really works, how the culture is, what are the people's attitudes and perception towards X, Y, and Z, right? And at the same time, how does that shape how you're doing research in those particular labs when you're in those countries, right? So that also shapes. So yeah, I think that is basically the basis of the commitment that I have. And I think now that commitment has shaped into when I started out, I did not know I didn't have like right words for it, like DEIB, you know, this has now become such a catchphrase that everybody wants to use it.
Yes.
But I think, in a way, sure, I think this is to simply be in the, not in the culture as such, but how this is also to represent that the work that I'm doing also fit in the popular culture in a way. I do not know if that makes sense.
It
Like,
does perfectly.
but at the same time, you know, I think what things I used to see from ICER and from Germany onwards, I used to see them as these efforts of DEIB, but in so many different contexts. I used to see them as extracurricular activities because we have been, you know, like ingrained that you need one primary job and whatever you do is additional, right? Like that does not give you money. That's your extracurricular thing. But I think I am right now, I've fought within the last 4 years within me and try to ensure and tell myself that my being and my interests are not dictated by what the extracurricular activity is and what science is. And my interests currently do not fit into the rigid structures of academia. And I think this is actually a problem for me because if I, for example, I'm ready for a faculty position, and if I would want to have a faculty position in sociology, or public policy, which deals with higher education and science policy, I can't get admitted into because the structures says that you do not have a degree in sociology or, you know, anthropology or public administration. Sure, but I do have the skills, right? Like what when a sociologist can have a PhD in sociology and study education policy in biomedical sciences, they do not have biomedical experiences. I do. So why doesn't it work the other way around? Anyway, like going back to the DEIB, I think I still feel that if this has become a bit of a catchphrase. But having said that, and I think the important thing and the reason that I have it on the website is to ensure that everybody gives or takes a little moment to think about themselves and their own privileges and how that puts them in a position of better or unearned advantages than others. And I think that is the reason why I have it on the website there, not just to be fitting in the pop culture.
No, but I mean, I read through it, and I mean, I keep reading about diversity and inclusion and equity in academia, but you had written about belonging. That was something I had never come across. Right. So that struck a chord, and I went into like this deep thought where I was like, yeah, I mean, I have to ask Mayank about this. What does he mean about DEIB, and why belonging, Mayank? I want to know that. What do you mean by belonging?
I think belonging to me, you know, I think they all have overlapping aspect of it, and
I
together they
know.
can be holistic. But belonging to me sort of sticks out because belonging is when you can be yourself, like entirely yourself, and therefore you're not trying to be somebody else or trying to fit in a space where you feel that you would be judged if you aren't, right? And I think when you are fully yourself, you are the best version of yourself. In other words, you thrive your best. That's what my understanding is. And I think when I try to include belonging, I try to say that because, you know, we can create pamphlets of we are an international or diverse institution or organization by having so many different colored faces on it or sharing, you know, the practices or the, you know, pay structures, which might be equitable. But having those people in one space, sure, it makes it diverse, but does it make it favorable that people would actually interact in a way that they would feel at home, they would feel at peace, they would be in a space where they would not shy away from sharing their background and their lived experiences? And I think that part is a more of a sort of nuanced and cultural change. And that is something that sort of imbibes for me in the aspect of belonging.
So beautifully said. Thank you for saying that. A lot of times when you are in research, I mean, I did my master's thesis, I always felt excluded because this was something that, there's a very rigid structure in academia. You have to do a PhD after master's. You have to go for a postdoc after your PhD. You have to get a faculty position once you are done with. And doing something out of norm is not appreciated, specifically in India at the moment. What do you think, Mayank? If we were to transpose, let's say, your philosophy into the current academic system that is in India right now, will it thrive, first of all? And secondly, do you think Indian academic structure will be open to change?
I think things are changing. I am not living there, so it's hard to experience those lived changes, but I can from afar I can see that things are changing, but the rate of change is very slow. And I think this is how I sort of perceive it, but like the strength and the weakness of India is its population. And I think one of the major thing about change is trying to be uncomfortable, because change cannot happen if you would not have uncomfortable discussions, courses, and conversations. And I think this is where the population and being sort of, in a feeling of discomfort comes in. And this is a reason why together, all together, it makes it so hard that the rate of change is slower.
Yes.
But of course, I think things can change, but I think the rate would likely be slow. But having said that, I over the last 10 years that I've been sort of away from India now, I've seen massive progress, like things that sort of didn't exist before, and the sort of activism that has taken from within the academic community and how it is shaping sort of higher education in terms of inclusion from all backgrounds, not just diversity, as well as accessibility from for people from all backgrounds. Like Queer Beats is there now, which wasn't there when I was a student. There is Bias Watch, which was started by one of these fellow postdocs in Boston. And now that Bias Watch has become such a big deal that people, they openly call out organizations and departments where they are not having enough women representation in scientific meetings and conferences. So they are being held accountable for the actions that they are taking without thinking in that preset culture that India has always been in. And I think this is that discomfort. And I think this will grow, but it'll be very slow. And now, a question to me, sort of coming back to India and probably doing these things. I think I'm not opposed to it. I think I would, and I think I don't think about will I be okay in that space. I think what matters to me is where am I going? Like where I can do this research. If I'm going to a department where people understand and value the sort of research I would want to do, I'll be okay. I will get students who care about these issues, and I would want to mentor them even further, share, basically what work has done in the past around these things, and talk about or, innovate, come up with new methodologies to address these things. So I think that is not a question for me. I think the question is, where is that space where I would feel I belong here? So I can be my best. And I think that is something that I want to take into consideration. But seeing that even in the West now, the research I want to do, I'm not fitting it into any academic sort of structure. It's distressing, So, and India, I do not know. Like maybe India is the alternate choice here, and they would be more perceptive towards it. I do not know. I have not explored that option yet.
But you would love to, right?
I would, yeah. I'm not opposed to
Yeah, we are open to
it.
change. And I feel like, slowly and steadily, people are moving ahead and people are talking about issues like these. So, yeah, I mean, it'll be great if more people step in and more people talk about equity, inclusion, diversity, and like you said, belonging in academia. And I really adore the way that you think. So thank you so much for sharing all these insights, Mayank. One last thing before we conclude, I want to ask you, people who want to work to your philosophy towards equity, inclusion, diversity, and belonging in academia specifically, and who want to make major changes, do you have any career advice for them? Is there any career in this, first of all? And secondly, do you have any career advice for people who want to work into these fields?
Okay, in terms of career, I think it is it is good to sort out what excites them, because I think the notion that with a PhD you are only going to get a faculty position, that's the career path, that is entirely wrong. That is one way that we have been taught, but there are so many different ways how those technical skills on during PhD can be applied. Now, in terms of doing DEIB work, or any sort of civil or societal, embedded work, I think they should figure out what they are interested in, and then try to basically dip their toes and see what they like. Like, they can do an internship at a government organization. They can do an internship more field work oriented, like Queerbeat, and they could do more data analysis and apply those STEM skills, maybe collaborating with BiasWatch. They could literally work around the methodologies and look at the more historical and the political aspects of it through, sociology and public school departments. And I think they should just figure out what they want to do. But I think beyond that, I think what counts as your abilities and skills, like, of course, with PhD, you're going to have some technical skills. But beyond that, I think what matters in the real world is, are you able to communicate? Like, how good are your communication skills? How good are your managerial skills? And I think these are three, four things that essentially matter wherever you go. It's not restricted to academia. Say, if you wanted to go in a company, and after PhD, you can get, sort of, early to mid or sometimes even senior managerial roles, right? And I think if you have understanding of how the society really works, or what are the, if you can bring in those additional perspectives beyond your own skills, and I think that can just steer you in a beautiful direction,
Yeah, I mean, we need more people stepping up and more opportunities by the government itself to be more involved. Like, there are KVPY examinations to get into ICER and sort of stuff like that. Maybe government can come up with policies that can help people get internships into governmental organizations, like you said, and they can dip their toes into this philosophy that you abide by. Thank you so much, Mayank, for coming and speaking
Of
about
course.
your philosophy. And it was
Of
amazing
course.
having you. Thank you.
Well, thank you for this opportunity for
You're
me to share these things.
the first Mohali alumni who came to my
We
podcast
can
about.
have another episode entirely on
Yes.
it.
We're going to have another episode and it's going to be really cool. I'm going to call everybody from ICER who has graduated and who's doing amazing work in diversity and equity. And then we can have like a chat panel and it'll be like really great. I can't wait to have that. Maybe by the end of, let's see.
That sounds great.
I have my birthday then. So maybe it'll be like my birthday special episode probably. I
Oh,
don't know.
that sounds amazing.
Yeah. Thank you, Mayank. I hope you had fun. I hope this
I
conversation.
did. It was great. I think, yeah, beyond that, I think it would be nice to have both way conversation, because at this point, I was the only one who was primarily speaking, but it would be nice to hear what you have been up to. And this is great that you have already started this. This is a great initiative. And I see the sort of the list of people that you have interviewed before, and I've listened to those people as well, which is phenomenal. But at the same time, how does that, fit in your bigger plans? What's your perspective on life? I think it's also good to hear from you as
I
well. It's
will.
also good to be on the other side of the table.
We'll talk about all those things with you again. It was amazing having you. Thank you so much. I have like two, three speakers who want to come back to the show and want to speak to me again. So this is something that is so cool. I never thought, that, people would be interested in my life, but then and things
Of
happened.
course. I mean, there's no relationship that is one-sided. That's how I see it.
You're right. All right. Bye, man. Thank you so much for
All
coming.
right.
Amazing
Of
having you.
course. Thank you.
Such a
Of
pleasure.
course. Thank you for having me. It was great talking to you. Bye-bye.
A garden's beauty never lies in one flower. These are the words by Matsona Daliveo, who is a Canadian author. And I heartfelt express my thank you to Mayank for joining me on the show and reminding us of the significance of these words. It's easy to get caught up in academia and to lose sight of the broader goal of making science accessible to everybody. Today, this episode served as a poignant reminder, and for that, I am very grateful to you, Mayank. And to all of you wonderful listeners out there, thank you so much for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, please share this episode with your friends and follow the podcast on whatever platform you're listening it on. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing right now, I just hope that tomorrow brings a better day for you, and I'll see you in the next episode. Till then, stay warm, stay safe, and always remember, strength thrives in our differences, not in our similarities. Bye. Thank you.